Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I'm very excited on this, I was going to say early Monday morning, but it's really not early, on Monday with Greg Hansen, managing partner with Hans & Company. Welcome, Greg.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We're excited to have you. And you and I had a chance to meet at a U.S. Chamber event not too long ago. We can thank Joe Puz, who is a friend of both of ours. And Joe happens to be the host of Project Management Office Hours here out of Business Radio X. And after we got to meet, you did your introduction that evening, I'm like, hey, we know a lot of nonprofits that need to know about you. So let me back up a little teaser for our listening audience. Tell us about Hans & Company and who you serve, and we'll go from there.
Well, thanks for having me again. And at the heart of it, Hans & Company is a consulting company I own here in town. And we serve nonprofits, which includes churches, but really it's any organization that's a 501c3. And we work to get them a advertising grant that's available to them. It's $10,000 a month in advertising dollars. And then we help them manage those dollars effectively. So what ends up happening is whether it's a local church or your local nonprofit, we get them $120,000 in marketing budget every year.
And how do people not take advantage of that? Is it because they just don't know about it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And people ask me that all the time. If this is so great, why doesn't everybody do it? And I think it's a variety of reasons, and that oftentimes folks who go into nonprofits do so because of a big heart passion or a drive or a cause or a mission, which is wonderful, but they might not necessarily be marketers. And that's how I came about it. Is years ago, I was asked to be in a nonprofit. I started volunteering and then serving on the board, and then I was asked to be chairman. And I just started looking for all the benefits, how to make it better. And I came across this, literally just stumbled across it, thought, this is amazing. There's no way this can be true. And so I started working it and implementing it and got the organization I was with 10 grand a month. So that's how I learned about it. And I've been on a mission ever since to get every nonprofit, every church I can on this.
Love it. And 10 grand a month really goes a long way for these AdWords, right?
Yeah. To give you an idea, now this could depend on a million different factors, but $10,000 a month gets you, we just launched it for a local church, for example. It gets them about 50,000 to 75,000 more impressions every month. And that's, you know, you type in something on Google in the search results. So 50,000 more people see it, not necessarily click it, but they see it. And it gets, you know, it again, a huge range, but on average, about 5,000 to 10,000 website clicks.
That's got to be huge.
For it works on national organizations, so it gets spread thinner. But for a local church or a local nonprofit, it's tremendous, especially if you can put it to a specific geography or a target people. Mm-hmm. Really big impact.
And do you know how long this grant has been available? It's been at least several years.
At least 5 years. Yeah. I learned about it 5 years ago. And it actually used to have a really cool component. It was a super grant. So if you could leverage the full $10,000 effectively and consistently, they used to give you $40,000 a month. They've since taken that away, but I still know nonprofits that use $40,000 a month in free advertising from Google.
Because it's working.
Yeah, it's a tax write-off for Google. But for the nonprofit, it's tremendous. It helps their mission, it impacts lives, and it really increases their business. Because even though it's nonprofits, by definition, are mission-centered, they are corporations, they're businesses.
That's right.
And this helps them be profitable.
Not too long ago, I got to was invited to speak to One, which is the Organization for Nonprofit Executives. Mm-hmm. And Michael, the new executive director there, had been introduced to me through Treasures for Teachers, who I'm on the board for. And Barb serves on the board there as well. And she's like, you got to come and speak to us. So I met with Michael. And one of the conversations that they were really interested in, the things that I speak to, was branding and marketing. Mm-hmm. Like really, you know, what is a brand and how does marketing fit into it? Which ones comes first, you know? In this organization, several people do have that marketing specialist on their team, either a volunteer or someone unpaid. But most, as you spoke to, are so passion-driven and really about the mission that they aren't necessarily utilizing, you know, Facebook or the internet as well as they could.
Yep.
So we'll have to definitely make that introduction to the organization. How are you currently finding clients? Is it word of mouth right now, or do you do some marketing yourself?
I do a lot of marketing myself, which helps sell it. I mean, the reality is I have to sell my business, right? But, you know, to grow anything, you have to market it. So I'm on social media. I go to networking events. I email. I cold call. You know, at the heart of things, I'm a sales guy, which I love. I've worked in a call center years ago, and a lot of people cringe at the idea of answering.
I know Dan and I do, our producer. but there are some folks, certainly yourself,
yeah,
who are so good at it.
Yeah. Years ago, I worked at State Farm here in Tempe, and it was before the big fancy offices were built. We worked in a rental building, and so I covered five different states. And so when you called 1-800-STATE-FARM, I said, "Hi, this is Craig from State Farm. How can I help you?" That was me. And it was tremendous. I was one of the top salespeople in the country. I found it fun because within 30 seconds, you have to engage somebody and figure out what makes them tick and how to get them to buy something. I mean, these were people from Georgia. It was one of my states. I had Georgia, Pennsylvania, New York. I had a guy in New York once jump off mid-call to go chase a raccoon in the alley. And I could hear him kicking the trash cans. True
how
story.
Funny.
And then he hopped back on. I sold him insurance. I got the sale.
Like, you need insurance if you're going to be kicking trash cans and chasing raccoons. No,
yeah,
I love it.
So
it's getting to know people, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes. Yeah. So I do cold calls, I do networking, and then introductions or business referrals. Well, really, they're just traditional sales.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. And what are some of the neat success stories? Are there any, and you don't have to mention names, but of the folks you've had a chance to work with over the past several years, what have you seen that's shifted for them? What if they, if somebody could be here with you to help tell the success story about mm-hmm. what you've given them, what would we hear them say?
Well, number one, it saves money because to hire somebody who's really good at marketing costs money.
A lot of money sometimes.
It does. It costs a lot of money. And so we not only discount it, but we offer it at a much lower price because we're, in essence, a vendor. So number one, it gets them a huge amount of impact and saves them money, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to hire a marketing person, you're looking at, on the low end, you know, full-time, maybe entry-level, $40,000. But to get a really great marketer, you're upwards of 100. So if you get a vendor, it's why you hire vendors, right? Why you hire Joe Puz from the PMO. You get somebody very skilled and the dollars go farther. So we help save them money, work on a budget. But secondarily, we really help spread their mission and their reach. So for this local church we just launched last week, they just launched within the last year. There's about 20 people in this small congregation. Absolutely, it's going to grow the church, which means change lives. And this is a real fun story. I won't say the name of the church, but the pastor, he has five target groups of people he goes after. And two of the ones that speak very strongly to me are single mothers who need help, and then boys without fathers or boys without male leaders in their lives. And so by this church growing and getting more people in the church,
you know,
and spreading the mission,
yes,
it's going to impact the community. It's going to decrease crime in the region and all these wonderful things.
Fantastic.
And so it literally changes lives.
And this congregation you're speaking about is really just that small? It's about 20 people
I think
now?
It's actually 14 or 16, yeah.
And every church has to start off,
yep,
right, like
mm-hmm.
that.
So they have a small building. There's some, it's like a condo or something, it went out of business. And so now they're just renting all the rooms out. And so they rented it's an old apartment complex.
That's what it is. Love it.
And so they're renting out a room and that's where they meet.
And how did they find out about you?
I knew one of the persons who goes to the church.
Wonderful.
And so he and I were getting lunch and he and I work in some of the same areas with some of the same people and we're just catching up. And I told him, I've been spending a lot of time on this. And he goes, "You've got to be kidding me. That can't be a thing."
Right.
No, I mean, it sounds so unreal. And I told him, seriously, it's a thing. This is how it works. And it's 10 grand every month. Now, you don't get a check, but I mean, you get a debit balance.
Towards that end.
Up to 10 grand.
Now, I would imagine that another reason why people may not be utilizing it is it cumbersome to interact with it.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. which is why we need an expert to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so if somebody goes in there and they're like, they're assigned to it mm-hmm. as a volunteer or even the executive director and her leadership team are like, okay, let's take a bite out of this.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be using it effectively
yes.
and then just throw their hands up in the air,
yes.
you know, gosh, it'd be great for this dollar sign, mm-hmm. but we don't know how to use
yes.
it. We don't anybody who knows how.
Yeah. We recommend our services as a setup fee because it takes time to get the grant
Absolutely.
And to get it up and running and then a 1-year engagement. Because we can tune it, we call it pulling the levers, and it helps us maximize and get more efficient every month, as well as adjust to campaigns. So for a church, if they have an Easter Sunday service that they need to really emphasize, or Christmas is around the corner, they need to change the campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them don't know how to do that. But on the other side of things, we've had some organizations insist that they just want a one-time kind of engagement where we get the grant, set it up, and you know, let them run with it. And the honest truth is that doesn't work as well, you know, because they figure out, well, this is really hard, or they get busy because, you know, they're running a nonprofit. And I've seen some of those campaigns just sit. And this is actually real. About 2 weeks ago, Google updated their terms and conditions, and you had to hit OK for your campaigns to reignite, and they didn't. So their dollars aren't being used anymore.
Mm-hmm. So does someone like that have an opportunity to come back in and reapply or?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or just, you
know, reinitiate.
They're already applied, but yeah, reinitiate.
Sure.
So it is painful. I mean, the grant process, it is a grant.
Well, yeah, and any grant process
is painful.
It can be painful unless you know what you're doing.
Yes, and that's why people pay us, because we've done it before. So it's 20 to 30 steps. And unless you know how to do the steps and do all the right things, Google's going to deny it. Then you got to go back, and then they deny it until you get it just right. Then, like you mentioned, it's the actual execution of making sure the AdWords are set up correctly.
I love the idea of you engaging with a nonprofit for at least a year, mm-hmm. because there are so many different things that can change for them. Mm-hmm. And you want to keep the campaign fresh and new. Mm-hmm. Right? Because even if there's the same eye seeing it, if it something finally clicks with them and that reticular activator has been keeping them engaged, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, oh, wow, you know, Christmas, this is for us. Or that opportunity, in this case, the example that you've shared where maybe now, you know, I know of a kiddo who needs a father figure, mm-hmm. or a friend who is now on her own with kids and really lost. And how wonderful that you can help.
Yep.
Get people to where they need to be as it relates to charities and nonprofits.
Absolutely. I tell people the mission, my real big goal for Hans and Company is to manage about $1 million a month in advertising dollars. So that means about 100 nonprofits.
Okay.
And I think that's doable. It's attainable. There's, oh golly, I just looked at it the other day.
Here in Arizona?
Oh no, national.
Oh, nationally.
And this works international. So right now, one of my friends is a missionary in Brazil. They have a church, there's maybe 50 people, and they don't leverage the dollars. So it's international. It works in a variety of different countries.
And because it's internet work, mm-hmm. you personally and Hans and Company serve companies mm-hmm. in and outside of Arizona and mm-hmm. internationally. Okay, well, that's good to know.
Yep. Yeah, all across the country. The countries vary, but it's a lot. I mean, we might not do North Korea, but, you know, Brazil's on the list of countries we can serve.
Yeah.
So that's the goal, is to get 100 nonprofits on this. And it's kind of exciting to think of being able to help manage $1 million a month towards impact and organizations and community and churches and
love
those sort of things.
We have a goal with our overall Business Radio X network to tell 1 million stories, and 1 million success stories in business, both obviously nonprofit as well as corporate and mm-hmm. public and private. And we love helping to that end.
That's great.
Yeah. What makes a great consultant? You clearly are personable. I remember mm-hmm. thinking that when we met and at the dinner, and just the stories that you're sharing about how you show up for people who have a passion. You clearly have a passion to help those folks. What do you think really makes a good consultant, and what should someone be looking for when they're selecting someone to mm-hmm. work with?
That's a great question, and I love it so much. My background is Fortune 500 companies, consulting, and then started my own company about a year and a half ago. And so it's funny, in many ways, I'm an unlikely consultant. Did real well in school growing up, high school, hit a bunch of family problems and grades just tanked, and moved with extended family and all these things.
I get it. I've been there, done that.
Yeah, my plan was to go to Harvard and play collegiate athletics, and I was well on my way there, and life changes. And so I ended up going to San Jose State, went to seminary after that. So I have a master's in theology, interestingly for some people. My undergrad is psychology, and then MBA and then Stanford. And so it's all sorts of twists and turns, but out of school, I worked in financial services and then insurance companies, and got picked up by a big consulting firm called Sogetti. It's part of the Capgemini Group, which is about 190,000 consultants globally. It's one of the big 20. And that's where I really fell in love with consulting, and anything that was people, process, or project is what I worked on. So it was the soft skills, it was proposals, it was writing contracts, it was doing estimates, and really just making sure the client was happy. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a bunch about this. I read a ton of books. I actually published an article in Consulting Magazine. And really, I think hiring a good consultant comes down to three things. Is when you hire a consultant, you hire them for their brain, their experience, and their opinion. And so you want to find people who are really smart. My shtick I tell people is I read 2 books a week. And the idea behind that is that any new insight or knowledge I get goes directly into the client. Which
but
is great.
That's not just a shtick. You literally read 2 books a week.
Yeah, I got a little behind this year. Yeah. I just finished book 66, but I had a new baby this year, so maybe that's my excuse.
Yeah, that's a good excuse. But you are an avid reader mm-hmm. and a lifelong learner.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never heard someone term it that way before, to say that, you know, working with a consultant, it's three things. So again, it's
It's their brain.
They're smart people. They have experience, mm-hmm. and that's key too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of folks say, hey, I'm an agency, I'm a consultant, mm-hmm. I'm a coach. And we, and I'm talking very loosely, but we go and we say, you know what? I can connect with you. Mm-hmm. I see that you're smart and you're personable. We can communicate well, but the experience, mm-hmm. we're 2-3 months in before we realize yes. they don't have the chops for this.
Yep.
They're learning on my dime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's true. It helps to have experience. And so if you find a consultant with all three, that's great. But if you find somebody who's just smart and can acknowledge, I've never done this before, but I'll pick it up in a week, that could be okay too.
Sure.
But the experience, to your point, is key. And in consulting, we had a loose rule of thumb that 1 year in consulting was about 5 years in the real world, because you're constantly working on new projects, new clients, new contracts,
yep.
Across a variety of industries and sectors. And then lastly, the third part is their opinion. You hire smart people, you hire vendors, you hire contractors, you hire landscapers to say, what do you think? And mm-hmm. whether you listen or not, it's totally up to the client. But those are really the three things at its core of what consulting is.
Love it. You mm-hmm. have this teacher vibe about you as well. Are you, obviously you're teaching when you're working with your clients, but do you teach others to do what you're doing with Hans and Company? Or?
I have. Yeah, I actually taught a class earlier this spring at Arizona Christian University, an upper level marketing course in consumer behavior, which was a ton of fun, 48 students. For better or for worse, I had a very realistic approach to teaching of just saying every day before we start class, you get 15 minutes to ask me anything you want about the real world. It was great. I love it. It was fun for the students. And I mean, I would get questions across the board of, you know, how much money did you make this year? And I would tell them, because
uh-huh.
I believe honesty and transparency helps. Because if somebody earned $1 million, I want to know what that guy did so I can earn $1 million.
Yep.
If that guy's earning $15, I want to know so I don't do that,
right?
So that was fun. In consulting, I was one of the national trainers for project management, software development, soft skills. Partner and I, his name's Steven, I'm actually getting lunch with him today. He did, we coined it a traveling road show. And so we'd buy pizzas and just go and visit all of our other consultants at the different clients and teach them the soft skills.
Smart.
Because software development's very techie. So the soft skills were lacking sometimes. And so a lot of those things are what really helps the client feel warm and fuzzy
yeah.
and make the engagement better. So.
I love that you shared that. I had a Treasure for Teachers mm-hmm. Volunteer brunch this weekend, and I sat next to a gentleman. His wife volunteered, and we got to talking. He since retired from Honeywell, but he was a software engineer. Mm-hmm. And he, of course, said the same. He said, look, we're nerdy. But one of the things that he really brought to his career was this ability to communicate mm-hmm. and those soft skills and connect. And he had likened it to... and I wish I could remember his name. I'd love to give him a shout out, because he was a real big podcast fan too, was fascinated with my business. But his dad had owned a business. It was a local mart in their little small town. And he learned really growing up in that store that he had to take mm-hmm. care of people. That wasn't his thing. And he was like, I became an engineer and I love doing what I do, but I watched myself pass up other people who mm-hmm. perhaps were even better at what I was doing. But because I was well-rounded mm-hmm. and it really speaks to obviously being able to communicate, continuing your education, whether it's formal or informal, reading is great. I went through my home office. I was telling Dan, our producer, 2 weeks ago, I need to clean the home office. And I had shelves and shelves of books. And I've told people I'm not a reader because I don't read fiction, but all of the books that I decided to pass on to Treasures for Teachers, in fact, so somebody else can enjoy them, were self-help, mm-hmm. business, money, everything. And I thought, I've read every single one of these books. I've got to stop telling people that I don't read books, because I've been shaped by my decision to keep learning.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a favorite book for you?
Oh, that's a good, that's
probably many books, but what's a recent favorite book?
Well, I love what you said about every book shapes you, because I truly believe that. And one of the things I do is keep track of all the books. And then that way, this is the consultant coming out in me. Now I'll turn it into a chart. And so you can see 14% of the books I read are sales books or business books. And you can look at it and take a step back and objectively think, what do I need to read more of to be a
yes.
better fill in the blank? But I look at it really as a diamond. When you find a diamond, there's dirt on it, there's junk on it, it's rigid. And every book you read kind of sands out a little part of it. And at the end of it, you hope that you have this beautiful, pristine system. Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And that's reading, right? So a lot of the books I read are bad books, or they're books I don't agree with. But a lot of the books are fantastic and really changed my life. The best book, golly. Oh, there's so many. I mean, it depends, right?
Yeah.
I love economics because it's how the world works. And Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell is fantastic. the Bible. I'm a Christian, so the Bible's tremendous. Whether it's, you know, I've read this several times, and maybe you've come across it too. The best sales books and the best leadership books, it's really just taken out of the book of Proverbs. You know, be thrifty, don't spend all your money. Like, that's very simple, mm-hmm. and you can write a finance book about it. And, you know, this was written thousands of years ago. Jeffrey Gittimer has tremendous sales books. He's a sales guy. Grant Cardone has some kooky stuff, but he really has some great work ethic kind of things.
Yeah.
I just started The Case for Christmas by Lee Strobel.
Oh, it's, I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's like a historical look at Christmas and where it came from and if it's legitimate or not or verifiable and all those sort of things.
You're loving that, huh?
It's great.
Yeah,
it's great. I've read a bunch of his books. I read the Communist Manifesto every year because so many people are into Marxism and socialism and Bernie Sanders. I'm not personally, but since
so many
people...
But you're fascinated. But yeah, what's the draw?
Well, if they are, then I should know what the book says. And so I read that every year.
Yeah.
I totally disagree with it, but
I read it. It's a commitment to continue to understand. Yeah. Interesting.
So I love reading. And I'll say too, one of the best ways is I use an app called Hoopla. Hoopla, Hoopla. Mm-hmm. If you have a local membership card to your library, you can download the app and log in with your card and you get 10 free audiobooks a month.
Oh, I like hearing that.
Yeah. So a lot of people do Audible. I get people off Audible all the time because it's free,
Hoopla.
Literally.
And we use our Chandler library card all the time, more so for my 11-year-old. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, because mm-hmm. I'm really teaching him to love books. But now that he has a broken collarbone, we talked about that before it came on air, he's complaining because he can't turn the pages. So maybe I need to turn him onto audiobooks through Hoopla.
And
that's great to know.
And what's great is you can do audiobooks. And sometimes people say, oh, it's not real reading. But it is, if you take a step back and think of reading, you taught your brain another step to read it with your eyes. But when you read, you say it with your tongue as you're reading. And so it slows you down. If you do audiobooks, it goes straight to your brain. Mm-hmm. And you get to skip that step. And your brain can actually understand about twice the words that people can speak, twice the speed. And so you can 2x the books and do them in half the time.
Yeah.
And your brain gets it all.
Fascinating.
I'm totally geeking out.
I'm just staring at you like, oh my gosh, I just want to spend more time with you. This is fascinating. Is there a book in you? Do you ever see yourself writing a book? And I asked that, and I want to share that I just brought, when I was cleaning my home office, I brought the books from all the guests that we've had who are authors and those who have obviously been kind to bring a book and thought to do that. And I can't wait to grow the library in here. So as you're chatting, and you're so well-read and clearly have so much experience, do you ever see yourself offering the world a gift of a book authored by Greg Hansen?
At some point, I think so. I've written about 48 articles already that have been published.
That could be a compilation. You could throw them all in a...
Yeah, that saved me work, huh?
It would. And that's a popular way, as I'm sure you know, popular way of getting that first publication out there.
Yeah.
How many articles?
48.
Wow. And really business and leadership? Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you have written about.
One of the ways I find that how I come up with ideas of what to write is that, number one, I think of what do people need to learn and what's not out there, because I don't want to write junk. When I was in grad school the first time, I started writing my thesis and my wife was bored out of her mind. She literally told me, I will never read that.
And you're like, so I got to change this
And that really caused me to think, if I'm spending so much time doing something and nobody wants to read it, there's no value. Mm-hmm. And I still have a lot of friends who are academics and I kind of tease them like, well, that's great. Nobody's going to read it. And so number one, I make sure it's something that people need to read or that's not out there. So it's very practical things. I wrote an article once, how to know when to fire somebody. That's a real issue that people have
to
really deal with. The second one is things that I need to learn. And then by forcing myself to organize the ideas and then write it down. And I use a very simple structure, introduction, 3 points, conclusion. And you can do that in less than 1,000 words. It's very readable. It's about 2 pages, but people tend to read it and not just skip it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I need to learn, I'll pick a topic and master it and then move on to the next topic. So it's been sales, leadership, business, software development, project management, business analysis, venture capital, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. So when you do have your book, we'll have you back on, maybe even before that. But I'm feeling and sensing a book in there for you.
Yeah, one day.
Awesome. What does it look like for a nonprofit to get started with you? And I mean, how does that start? Well, you mentioned that you network and you advertise and do marketing as well as word of mouth. But if someone's listening and they're like, okay, I'm not sure this is for us and I don't know the expense or what it takes from us to have, you know, get started. How do they start? Is it a conversation?
Yep. Yeah. We do free consultations. It's very laid back. I usually start with, tell me about what you do and just tell me more.
And here's how we can help you.
Yeah. I'll be honest, if we can't help you or if it's not a fit or if the organization doesn't qualify or whatever, it's at the end of the day, I believe business is serving. And so if I can serve them, I'll let them know. If I can't serve them, I'll tell them I can't serve them and point them in another direction. But yeah, it's no cost to give me a call or shoot me an email and just say, tell me about your nonprofit and maybe I can help. You know, what are your mission? What's your mission? What are your goals for churches? It's more members, more donors, more volunteers.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a nonprofit I was just chatting with in Colorado, they build and donate bikes. And so it's getting that fitness, wellness, lifestyle out into the public.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends. But really, I just try to understand people and they can reach out to me. My phone number is on the website, email.
Good.
And I make myself available. My goal is to help people.
And who is a good client for you? And what I mean by that, we clearly know it's churches, nonprofits, charitable organizations, folks and organizations with a passion for mm-hmm. making a difference in the world. Is there more to it than that? Or would you really say is that who a great client is for you?
It depends. Once a nonprofit gets big enough, like Goodwill is a very large organization, they probably wouldn't use us because they have thousands of staff. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of the middle. If it's one person who just started a nonprofit, it could be difficult because it does cost money to hire us. But once they get up to a couple people or just a budget, that really starts to be the perfect fit. And I tell folks, even if there's not a budget there, in the past, I've helped compile a letter to share with their board say, hey, if you just want to bring me to a board meeting or throw me on a phone call, I can help sell it for you. Because I recognize that not all nonprofit leaders are salespeople, and I can provide the talking points or help them understand that typically those who fund a nonprofit are the general public or it's donors, and the donors tend to be business people.
Mm-hmm. And they would understand
They understand the proposition. They love it.
Yeah, and they're going to find the money or they're going to write the check for them and say, let's do this.
Yes. Yeah. Business people always have money to cut, but they're hesitant to cut the check unless they know it's going to be spent well. But if you say, if you cut the check for this amount, you're going to get this, it's usually a 10x multiple. The business people are on board and we'll even just cut the check. And like, we provide discounts. If you pay monthly, that's fine. But if you pay for the whole year, we provide, it's about an 18% discount on top of that, which a business guy gets.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, good. That helps. And again, not just in Arizona, worldwide.
Yeah, for most of the world. There's a list of countries, but...
That Google will say, hey, this is, of course, it makes sense. They've got to have their...
But it's most of the countries, definitely all in the country.
Yeah.
All of the United States and then a handful of the countries.
Yeah. A great mentor for you in your life? Who's been
That's a good one. I had a mentor tell me once that you should always have three types of people in your life, that you should have somebody you're mentoring, somebody you're working alongside with, and somebody who's mentoring you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been tremendously helpful for me. Growing up, my parents were divorced. I had a very rough childhood. All sorts of terrible, horrible things. And there's a test, I forget what it's called, but social workers use it. And the higher you score, the more likely you're supposed to end up in prison or homeless or those sort of things.
And you were up there.
I think I got a 9 out of 10.
What?
Yeah. It was people don't expect that because I'm clean cut and all those kind of things now. So it was a very, very, very rough childhood. But thankfully, there were mentors in my life. Some were from church, but the first ones really were athletic coaches. I was very fortunate to play in a very good football program. And in hindsight, I could see these men were going out of their way to pour into me because they saw a kid who had divorced parents and the parents were gone and all these things. And I think that was truly one of the things that kept me from doing a lot of more stupid things.
Yeah.
Just people, I mean, I still talk with them, people who poured into me.
Mm-hmm.
And that really made a difference in my life.
I love that phrase, poured into you, really saw the value in who you are for you.
Yeah.
And that there was a need to love on you and gave you some direction.
Yeah, I had a mentor in high school and I started going to church and his name's Justin. He's down in Katy, Texas now and works on oil rigs and I still chat with him. And I remember there'd be times where something terrible would just happen with my family and I'd text him and say, I need to talk. And it'd be a midnight meeting and we'd go to Denny's and he would just listen.
Yeah.
And that made a difference in my life.
I'm thinking of my swim coach from high school, Tom Timponi, who actually just got done with, I think, a massive heart surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And here's still local. And similarly, when my parents were going through a divorce during high school, I could just sit down and chat with him. And every day he'd say, how's it going? You know, and just checking with me. And I had a boyfriend at the time. And he was one of the people who said, look, love that you have this relationship and keep it in check.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're feeling this, unearthing in your family life. And it's funny, I've been in the Valley since high school, and I used to run into him a lot at either at Einstein's or at Starbucks. And we'd always laugh and just get caught up on his family and my family. And he's just that great example. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing about athletics or clubs, or when anytime we can get our kids involved in something that's an organized opportunity to learn and grow, we have another set most frequently of adults who can help nurture us along.
Yeah, I can truly say that a good portion of my work ethic came from football.
Absolutely.
I played for 8 years, and I think out of those 8 years, we won 93% of the games, 3 state championships and 2 divisional championships, and very fortunate to play in that program. That's where I learned a lot of things about leadership and sacrifice. And you know, in our program, for example, every day we had to run a mile around this lake that was near the park, and I was one of the better athletes, and so I'd usually finish up in the front. And part of how our coaches trained us was as soon as you finished, you went right back and caught the guys at the tail end, and you made sure they finished.
Yeah.
And so even today, you know, when I have tough sales calls or tough meetings or I'm working out in the garage or whatever, I still literally think back to what those coaches would say to me. And it makes a difference.
Absolutely.
You know, pouring into people matters. And that's one of the reasons I love helping nonprofits.
Fantastic. Tell us what you're working on now. Anything exciting besides that you're a newborn? How old is your, it's quite a year yet, your little one?
I have 5 kids.
What?
I know. They just keep coming.
You can't even be that old to have 5 kids. Joe and I have that many kids, but no.
I have, 3 girls, a boy, then a girl. So Emma's 6, Hannah's 4, Sophia's 2, Sam is 8 months, and my wife's pregnant with number 5, a girl.
Busy family.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to your wife.
Kudos.
Because that's
big kudos.
6 and down. That's busy times.
It's like a Band-Aid.
Yes. Yeah. So aside from family, the growing family, what are you working on business-wise? Anything exciting and new and different we haven't talked about yet?
Yeah, there's actually a company. I have a co-founder. His name's Jesse. He owns a company here in town called Drip Drip Marketing as well. He's fantastic if you want an intro to him.
Yes, we do.
He does email marketing, and it's basically he emulates one-on-one email marketing. So it's like real conversations, but it's not that spammy stuff you get. That's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So in the late 90s, email open rates were about 90%.
Right.
And they float around 24 to 29% now. He averages consistently 60 to 80%. And so for folks who need lead generation, he's tremendously effective with it.
We'd love to have a conversation and interview him. We'd love to learn from him.
Yeah, he's good. So he and I are co-founders in this company called Infinitum. And at the heart of it, it's a venture capital fund.
Oh, I think you briefly spoke to this.
Yeah, it's briefly at the dinner. So private equity is using private dollars to have equity or ownership in companies. And a subsegment of private equity is venture capital. It's like Shark Tank or Andreessen Horowitz, a lot of other venture capital companies. And basically, that's when they invest money into a startup company like a Facebook, and they take part of the company and give money to them to grow the company. So he and I have co-founded a company called Infinitum. It's actually a software company that owns a handful of venture capital funds. And it's the first in the country that allows anybody, whether that's rich people or poor people, to invest money into a venture capital fund.
Mm.
So what's unique about that is there are a lot of things like crowdfunding or Kickstarter or Indiegogo, where you get a t-shirt for investing in a company. You can even now, thanks to changes in regulations like the Jobs Act of 2012, put money into startup companies, but nothing exists where regular people, they're called unaccredited, can invest money into a fund. And the fund is really what makes it unique, because it's like the stock market. Very few people actually pick one-off stocks to invest in.
Mm-hmm.
Most people invest in a mutual fund. It de-risks it. It provides a portfolio effect, and you get a wide ownership. So if you invest in the S&P 500, you'll average almost guaranteed about 8% return over the course of 100 years. So you'll get your money back every year. And so that's what's important in startups, is you can pick one-off companies, but then it's a guessing game. Then it's a my gut feel game. But if you get a fund, it's the same kind of effect where you can really spread the risk. And you can't use the word guarantee in finance, but you can improve your probability of returning the funds.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's the first in the country. It should be exciting and very big.
Yeah, so we'll have to have you two back for that conversation as well. We'll have Drip Drip on, and we'll have you both back on for this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, we're raising the first round of financing for that, and it's going pretty well.
You'll be selecting the companies then, the startups that you'll be funding and championing?
We could. So Infinitum's the software company, if you think of at the top, and then it owns all these funds. So the first fund will be called what's a fund of funds, which means it's like the mutual fund or an index fund. So we'll pick 10 funds that we'll put money to them, and then they make the investments in the individual companies. So our what's called a limited partner, if you were to give me or give my fund 10 bucks, your 10 bucks would go across 100 companies. Mm-hmm. And so you're almost, again, you can't use the word guaranteed, but you greatly improve the probability.
Yeah.
Because at the core of it, it's math, it's statistics. And so we just figured out the math and figured out a way to make it work. And so later on, we can change it and pick our own companies or whatever, but out of the gates.
It's a great place to start, yeah.
Yeah, it should be pretty unique.
Yeah, yeah. No one else is doing it the way you're doing it.
Yeah, nobody in the whole country. It's hard to believe.
Impressive.
It took us a long time to figure it. So people say, well, how can you do it? How come nobody else did it? And it's the legal framework. How we came up to legally do it is the novel aspect, because the current venture capital model uses exemptions. So it makes it, the reality is it makes it less expensive to do what they do and still make a ton of money. Mm-hmm. We think that's neat, but it sure sounds like somebody had friends who wrote the laws. I'm just saying, if they both went to Harvard. And so really what drives it is, as I mentioned, my dad, you know, I grew up very blue collar, middle, not even, I don't even know if it was middle income. My dad currently makes knife handles out of his garage, for example. Yeah. Unique micarta. Micarta is a material, but he's very good at it. He's very handy. Unique micarta is the Instagram handle. And this is beautiful. He's the top knife makers in the country, use his products, but it's a very modest blue collar thing. Yeah. Like I grew up working in construction and putting tars on rooftops. And Jesse, my co-founder, he grew up on a farm. He has, I think, 8 or 9 siblings. He was, you know, slinging hay bales. And so there's this, how the model currently works is only for the rich.
Right.
And we fundamentally don't think that's fair. We think it's a human right to spend your money however you want to spend your money. And whether you want to do this or not, you have a right to, because it's your money.
And a human right to make money.
Yes.
Right? I know when we met at that dinner, I spoke a little bit about conscious capitalism. Uh-huh. And they are one of our sponsors, the chapter here in Arizona. And that's the conversation. When we do well, when we can be successful, we can help change our communities and really change the world. And that's really our ultimate goal.
And we agree 100%. There are a lot of things that are interesting about the current model, because anybody could have done what we're doing 80 years ago if they would have just eaten the cost, the extra legal cost, which is tremendous. I can't underplay that.
But worth having done it.
Oh, yeah. It'll pay off. It's like Walmart. You don't have to sell expensive shampoo. You just have to sell a lot of it. So in traditional venture capital, you have to find 10 people with $1 million. We say, well, why don't you just find 1 million people with 10 bucks? Then you just get the volume effect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the right to earn money. If you think of, you know, access to capital, it's one of the United Nations Big 20 goals. Women have different access to capital. Blacks have different access to capital. And part of it's, and Jesse too, are both religious people, but we believe we're all made in the image of God, that whatever color, sex, or whatever, you're valuable. There's intrinsic worth. And I don't think that changes just depending on how many dollars you have in the bank account.
Right. And although our world is, not world, but at least our country is set up to have us believe that.
Yes. Yeah. We were in Denver last week and we're having dinner with a friend and we're going around the table saying, what are your gifts? You know, what are you really good at? Mine was leadership and influence. And I usually tell the story, when I was a kid, I was in the smart classes. And as a result, most of my friends were kind of smart, dorky kids. And they got picked on all the time. And one of the ways my dad raised me was to defend people who can't defend themselves. Mm-hmm. And so my dorky friends would get picked on. And then the bully, who was even bigger than me, you know, I ended up having choice words and actions with those bullies and, you know, punching them in the nose, because it's not right for people to use power against other people. Mm-hmm. And so I've always had a soft spot to defend those who can't defend themselves. And democratizing venture capital is one of those ways to give people who don't know this exists a right to access. Venture capital, it's amazing what some of the VCs, venture capitalists, sure, have told us behind closed doors. I won't say names or regions or anything, but we've had people tell us, you know, if you let regular people in, you'll have to talk to them. Yeah.
Yes.
It's called the world.
We would need,
it's called the world. We've had a lot of people say that. Not everybody. There's a lot of good people doing it, but there's venture capital is not complex. It's you give money and you get part of a company and you help them grow. Mm-hmm, that's really the fundamental aspect. And true experts can always teach things, right? And if a venture capitalist can't teach that, they probably need to get their expertise up a little bit, but that's the core of it. And so we're just providing the framework and the software and the legal framework.
It's exciting.
To reduce the complexity that everybody has a right to do it, whether they want to or not, they should be able to.
So for our listeners who are interested and curious about what you're doing there with your partner, can we learn about it online and to give us a little bit of that information?
Yeah, they can go to my LinkedIn. It's listed there. Infinitum is the name of the company.
Spell that, Infinitum?
Yeah, it's like infinity. It's Latin. Infinitum, I-N-F-I-N-I-T-U-M.
Oh,
Infinitum.
Got it. Okay. .com.
Infinitumfund.com. So they can go to my LinkedIn or they can Google it or they can go to the website. And we can't launch anything until we have SEC approval.
Okay.
But they can go and they can sign up, get notifications. And then once it'll be a mobile app. Once we launch that, they can download it and start investing into the companies.
Wonderful. And we can find you at Hans & Company for the nonprofit and Google grant piece.
Yep.
Okay. And on social, I think you mentioned you're on social for Hans & Company as well?
Yeah. Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. My personal Instagram's public, so people can go there and it links to my company pages or they can go to the company pages. Yeah. All that stuff's on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. I'm not really too active on Facebook, but the other platforms.
Very good. And your first job, you said you have had a lot of experience doing a variety of things, but when you were a kid, first job for you?
It depends how you define job. That's funny because it's like if you try to play the game of corporate America, a lot of these things hurt you. But if you decide to go the entrepreneur route, it's hugely valuable. So for a while, I kept getting kicked in the teeth for all these different jobs I've had, but it's tremendously effective now. So the first job I've ever had, though, was probably working with my dad on the job sites, like sweeping and brooming and all that kind of stuff. But I started selling candy out of my backpack in junior high. And apparently that's like what true salesmen do.
Any entrepreneur who is really good at sales most frequently has that story. Yeah. I was, you know, designing t-shirts and I've got selling candy out of my backpack.
Yeah, with a markup.
Of course.
I did that. And then I had a car washing company in high school or junior high school, and I was making like $25 an hour. So I printed up flyers. I had business cards. I went door to door and got clients. So it was recurring revenue.
And doing it in their driveway? Was that the deal?
They would drive to my house.
Sweet. You got them to drive your house for $25 a pop, huh?
An hour. So yeah, I had a whole range of services.
Sweet.
And, I had a lawn care company in high school that was part of a senior project. This is funny. It was for an AP economics course. And we were supposed to get, I'm using air quotes, get a loan from the teacher to start our company. And we said, well, that sounds, you know, silly. Why don't we think of something we already have the capital for? And so we chose landscaping. And I knew it. We're all good at it. So it's myself and four guys. And we started it. We were the most successful company in the class. We set the school record by over three times.
Oh, wow.
And at the end of the class, the teacher said, well, you owe me, the loan was $500 that we never took. And she said, you owe us $500. And we said, what for? She goes, well, it needs to go back into the class fund. And so I joked that was my first run-in with taxes.
Yeah.
Because she did nothing and literally took $500 from us.
I'm baffled by that.
Yeah. In hindsight, it seems pretty unethical. But,
wow. So, yeah.
So it was that stuff. My first job for somebody else was as a busboy in Macaroni Grill.
Very good.
I loved it. It was great. We used to stack those kind of Picardi glasses as high as we could. And I think my record was 24. The managers weren't a fan, but the customers loved
it. I bet they did. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, if you've beat 24 stack, let us know. Wonderful. It truly has been a pleasure to get to know you and just fascinated by all the things that you're up to in this world and really your passion for helping people and making a difference. Yeah, I would love to have you back to have the conversation with, tell me your partner's name again.
Jesse.
Jesse, yeah. We'll have Jesse back in when you guys are ready and continue the conversation. Yeah, and I know Dan, our producer, is already slipping me notes about all the introductions, and that's probably not even an eighth of who we would like to introduce you to. That's kind of our magic here at Business Radio X, not only giving you some content and some airtime, but also accelerating those relationships with the right people. So thank you again for making time with us on this beautiful Monday morning. And it's been a pleasure. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within Max 6 and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona studio. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.